Thank you so much, Karen. So although many of us may be excited and relieved to have a bit of a break from menu planning, shopping, cooking, spending many, many hours in shul, and I actually even saw a post on Facebook this morning, someone said, isn't really not Erev Yontif today, you know, in disbelief. For me, the end of the Yontif season, the end of the Tishrei Chagim season, always comes with a little bit of sadness. It's bittersweet. There's so much excitement during this season, so many rituals to have family traditions about, lots of family time, and in general, it's a time of a lot of spiritual connection. Whether it's the very serious, very awesome in the literal sense of the term, emotions of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, or the more joyful and festive Sukkot. It's definitely a time of a lot of spiritual connection and religious inspiration. And going forward this week, back into the routine of the regular year, finally arriving at the after the Chagim, where we all push everything off to, right? We'll deal with that after the Chagim. We'll make those calls after the Chagim. We'll work on that project after the Chagim. Finally, it's here, the after the Chagim. What do we do now? How can we infuse some of that Yontif spirit into our more regular routines? So it's a fairly common phenomenon in Chazal to have a beef regarding what the most important mitzvah. Sometimes Chazal lists certain mitzvot as keneged kulam. As in famously, as we say it every day in the Mishnah and Peah, Talmud Torah keneged kulam is one example of a mitzvah that Chazal say is equal to all others. One example of such a debate is found in a medrash that discusses a pasuk in Parshas Tetzaveh. So this medrash actually is hard to find in any of our standard collections of medrashim, but it's in the Ein Yaakov, which is written in the 16th century by Rav Yaakov ben Chaviv, and he's a commentary on medrash, and he writes in his introduction, he quotes this as a medrash. So he writes, and if you look at, this is source one, he writes, Ben Zoma Omer, Matzinu Pasuk Kolel Yoter, V'hu Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. We have a pasuk that really includes all other psukim, all other mitzvot. And that is Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That is, Hashem is our God, Hashem is one. And this kind of makes sense. This is really foundational, this is a fundamental tenet of our faith that we believe in God, we believe in one God. So it kind of makes sense that if he's trying to look for one pasuk, one theme, one idea, one mitzvah, to encompass all others or be equally as important to all the others combined, then you would choose Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. That's one opinion in the Medrash. Then we have Ben Nana. Ben Nana says, Matzinu Pasuk Kolel Yoter, there's one pasuk that's inclusive, seemingly, of everything else, V'hu, V'yahavta L'Re'acha Kamucha, love your neighbor as yourself, love your friend as yourself. And this also we can make sense of. Bein adam l'chaviro, interpersonal relationships, being a good person, being a mensch, being a baal midot, being someone who respects other people, who treats other people as he or she would want to be treated, that kind of also makes sense as something that we would say is inclusive or, you know, equal to, as important as everything else combined. But the third opinion is a little bit more jarring at first, it seems a little bit more strange at first. Shimon ben Pazi says, Matzino pasa kolel yoter vehu, et hakeves ha'achad ta'aseh baboker, v'id hakeves ha'sheni ta'aseh bin ha'arbayim. Shimon ben Pazi says, pasuk in Parsha Tetzaveh, sacrifice one lamb in the morning and one lamb in the afternoon. This is talking about the Korban Tamid. We have the Korban Tamid shel Shachar, the Korban Tamid that's brought every morning, and the Korban Tamid shel bin ha'arbayim that's brought every afternoon. So that seems a little bit more strange. The Korban Tamid, one type of Korban, yes, it's brought every day, and yes, it's an essential component of the Beis HaMikdash service, but it seems to me to be a little bit more strange to choose that as something that's all-inclusive, all-encompassing, something that is equally as important as all of our other obligations. But I think the answer is fairly obvious. It emphasizes, the Korban Tamid emphasizes our ongoing commitment to Hashem, reaffirmed every day, twice a day, through the Korban Tamid. It's easy to demonstrate, or relatively easy, to demonstrate devotion, our devotion to God, in the midst of moments of inspiration and spiritual loftiness. Like, for example, the sounds and lights show type of experience described as Mamad Har Sinai. Or during the Chagim season, on a day like Yom Kippur, which is the holiest day of the year. Or lo aleinu, in the midst of a crisis, right? There are no atheists in a foxhole, as they say. And in those times, for many of us, it might be easier to connect to God. But it's much more difficult to continue to do so every single day, day after day, day in and day out, routinely. And that's what the Korban Tamid symbolizes. That's what the Korban Tamid requires of us, to have that ongoing commitment, that ongoing devotion, every day, day in, day out, day after day, routinely. And according to Ben Pazi, that is the cornerstone of our entire Avodat Hashem. And although today we don't have the Korban Tamid, the Gemara in Brachos teaches us tefillot, according to one opinion, there are two opinions in the Gemara, what tefillah is supposed to be reflective of, or parallel to. So in one opinion is tefillot keneged avot tiknum, and that's why we daven three times a day, Avraham daven shachar, Yitzchak daven mincha, Yaakov daven ma'ariv. The other opinion in the Gemara is tefillot keneged korbanot tiknum, that our way of connecting to Hashem in the times of the Beis HaMikdash was through korbanot, and since we no longer have korbanot, we now have tefillot instead, and shacharit is keneged the korban tamid. We have the korban tamid shel shachar. We now daven shacharis to connect to God at that time of the day. Mincha is keneged the korban tamid shel bin ha'arbayim. The korban that we used to bring in the afternoon, we have mincha at that time of the day. And ma'ariv, the Gemara says, is keneged the evarim v'chalavim, the leftovers of the korbanot that they used to burn at the in the evening at the end of the whole day. That's why we have ma'ariv to parallel that. So, and the same difficulty that probably existed with the korbanot tamid definitely exists with tefillah, with davening. I work in a high school, so I have many conversations about this issue, how to make davening more meaningful, and how to help us connect to tefillah as it relates to high school students. But I don't think the difficulty is unique to that population. I think it's true for each of us, regardless of our stage in life. Connecting to God when we're experiencing a spiritual high or in times of stress and crisis is natural, like I said before. Maintaining that connection, though, when going through the motions on a daily basis isn't something easy. Doing the same thing, following the same routine, davening the same davening, saying the same words day after day can begin to feel rote and meaningless. And in fact, the Gemara in Kiddushin says, Gadol mitzuveh ve'oseh. Sorry? Mitzuveh ve'oseh. It's someone who does something because he or she is commanded is greater. Whatever greater means. And the Ritva, if you look at source number two, the Ritva, who is a commentary on the Gemara in 13th century Spain, explains that what does Gadol mean? It means getting more schar. He says, the Amar Rabbi Chanina, I'm reading in source 2, Gadol ha-mitzuveh ve'oseh, yoter mimi she'eino mitzuveh ve'oseh. One is greater, one who is commanded and does an action, is greater than one who is not commanded and does an action. Pirshu Rabotenu, the Ritva quotes Tosfot, actually I think this is Rashi, Tam ha-davar, the explanation, what's the explanation for this? Shazeh satan mikatrego, kishahu mitzuveh, vizeh in satan mikatrego, ulfum tsara agra. The reason is because when you're told to do something, when you're commanded to do something, human nature, our natural instinct, is to not want to do it. So the satan, right, the devil, is kind of in there in our head telling us, don't do it, don't do it. Something that you have to do, a responsibility, an obligation, don't do it. And when you're not commanded to do something, when you don't have to do something, then that human instinct, that human nature of kind of being told, don't do it, it's not there. And because it therefore takes more effort, takes more effort to overcome that human nature, that instinct, that inclination, the reward is greater, right? And ufum tsara agra means according to the work, according to the trouble is the reward. So because it takes more effort to do it when you're commanded to, so the reward is greater. So the Ritva seems to explain that it's, the reward is greater. But then the Ritva explains another approach. Rabbeinu HaGadol Zal Piresh, another explanation. Shehamitzvot einan lahana'at ha'el yitbarach ha'mitzvah ela lizchutenu. Mitzvot, God did not give us mitzvot for His pleasure, for His benefit. Right? They're not for God's pleasure, for God's benefit. Rather, for ours, for our zechut, for our merit. Was there a question over there? No? Okay. Umishu mitzuveh Kiyam Gezerat HaMelech, and therefore one who's commanded, he fulfills the decree of the king. Something that God commanded him to do, that's what he fulfills when he fulfills a mitzvah. Lefikach scharo merube yoter, zeshalo kiyam mitzvat HaMelech, therefore his reward is greater than someone who did not fulfill the decree of the king. Mikol makom, af hu ra'oi lekabel schar, sharei mituv leiva v'chasidut, hichnis atzmo la'asot mitzvah Hashem yitzbarach. But someone who didn't fulfill a commandment can still get reward because out of the goodness of his heart, he chose to do something that God commanded. But this is dafka b'mitzvot sh'tziva Hashem yitzbarach la'achirim sh'yesh lo bahen ratzon. But this is specifically true about mitzvot that Hashem commanded others to do. So this is in the category of something that Hashem wants, something that Hashem commanded. It's just not, he just didn't command me to do it, he commanded you. So if I choose to do that, I'm doing an action that Hashem wants, that Hashem has demonstrated that it's something that he likes. And therefore, if I do that out of the goodness of my heart, I can still get reward. But the Ritzvah questions us, Aval ha'osem me'elav, mitzvot shelo tzivta bahem Torah klal, zohi she'amro, kol she'eno mitzuveh b'davar ve'oseyu nikra hedyo. But if I just make something up and I say, hopping on one foot, I think is really meaningful, so I'm going to do that, and that's going to connect me to God, that, the Ritzvah says, is doing something where you're called hedyo, you're called an idiot, basically. Because that's not connecting to God, that's not coming from God, I made it up. So that you don't get reward for. So tying back into what we were talking about before, about routine, it's hard to do mitzvot, it's hard to continue to connect to God because it's a responsibility. It's something we have to do, and it's not necessarily something we always find meaningful. We're doing it because we're commanded. And our natural inclination might be that we don't feel like it, but we do it anyway. And that's difficult. And that's why the Gemara, according to the Ritzvah's explanation, that's why the Gemara says, Gadol mitzuveh ve'oseh, that you get more reward for that kind of behavior. And God sees, because God sees that it's difficult. And that's why the reward, so to speak, is greater when we do it. And I think that's the message of the Korban Tamid. It's always, right, means always maintaining a relationship requires investing effort, even when it's challenging, and it requires one's ongoing physical, mental, and emotional presence. The same is true for our relationship with Hashem. In order to maintain a close relationship with Hashem, we have to be there, physically and mentally, every day. And we might not feel a spiritual high from davening every day, but that's okay. That's normal. We will still have accomplished having God as a constant presence in our lives, even if we don't connect on such a lofty level, even if we don't really feel meaning in what we're saying, we're taking that time and we're having God be a presence in our lives every day. And I think many other mitzvot are getting at this ideal as well. We don't just want to involve God in our lives at times of spiritual peaks, like we've said, like Shabbat or Chagim. We want God to be a constant presence in our daily routine. So we do that through tefillah. But we take eating and bring God into that by putting it in a framework and giving it boundaries and limits and rules in the forms of the laws of kashrus and the laws of brachos. We take physical intimacy with our spouses and we bring God into that by putting it in a framework and giving it boundaries and limits and context in the form of the laws of tara and mishpacha. And it's this idea of incorporating God in our lives and not only striving for religious growth from the once-in-a-lifetime type of experiences that's symbolized by the Korban Tamid, and that therefore makes the Korban Tamid worthy of being the cornerstone of the entire Torah, and that, I think, explains Shimon ben Pazi's opinion in the Medrash quoted in the Ein Yaakov. But it's this exact idea, incorporating God into our daily routines, that's the challenge of the after the Chagim season. We're coming down from a high. We're coming away from a time when it's easier or to incorporate religiously meaningful experiences into our lives. So how do we keep this up going into the after the Chagim season? How do we maintain it? So let's explore together a sugya in Maseches Kiddushin that I think can shed some light on this question. So let's look at source number 3. This is the first Mishnah in the second paragraph of Kiddushin. And the Mishnah says, Ha'ish mekadesh bo b'shlucho, that a man can be mekadesh, a woman can marry a woman, can sanctify her, can go through the Kiddushin process. Right? Kiddushin, their Jewish marriage is made up of two stages. First is the Kiddushin, or Erusin stage. Then is Nisuin, or the marriage, right? Them starting to live together as husband and wife. Nowadays, we accomplish all of these processes under the chuppah at the same time. Giving the ring is the Kiddushin, followed by the canopy itself, and the Sheva Brachos, and the Yichud Rum. Those are all parts of how we accomplish Nisuin. So the Mishnah is talking about Kiddushin, that a man can be Mekadesh a woman himself, or he could send a messenger. Because in the times of the Gemara, they used to do Kiddushin and Nisuin up to a year apart. Right? The man could be Mekadesh the woman, he could set her aside as the woman who was going to be his wife, and that meant that she was designated for him, and she could not go and marry any other man after they did the Kiddushin. And then up to a year later, they would actually do the Nisuin and start living together as husband and wife. So the Mishnah tells us that a man could do Kiddushin himself or with a messenger. Let's say she lives halfway across the world, they met online, and he wants to do Kiddushin, but he can't travel to her now, so he calls up his friend who lives in Australia, and he says, go be Mekadesh Jane for me. And the Mishnah says that works. If, right, the friend goes in his Mekadesh Jane and says, Harei at Mekudeshes le Shlomo, right, the friend back in New York, then she's Mekudeshes to Shlomo, she's married to him, or the first stage of the marriage process. Then the Mishnah says, Ha'isha mitzkadesha ba'u b'shlucha, that a woman can also accept Kiddushin herself or with a messenger. So let's say, right, Shlomo doesn't have a friend in Australia, but Jane has a friend in New York, so she could send someone to accept the Kiddushin on her behalf. Then the Mishnah says, Ha'ish mekadesha bito k'shehi na'ara ba'u b'shlucho, that it, according to the Torah, a father is allowed to marry off his daughter when she's under bat mitzvah. We don't do that anymore nowadays. But mido oraisa, according to the Torah law, that's allowed. So the Mishnah also says that could also be done through a messenger. The father could appoint a messenger to be mekadesh his daughter, to accept kiddushin on behalf of his daughter. So the Gemara says, the Gemara raises a difficulty, and the Gemara says, hashta b'shlucho mekadesh bo mibaya. Once we know that a man could do kiddushin with a messenger, isn't it also obvious that he could do it himself? Why does the Mishnah need to use an extra word of bo? The word bo, that he could do it himself, seems to be superfluous. If a man could send somebody else to do the Kiddushin for him, then obviously he could also do it himself if he's standing right there, the Gemara assumes that's obvious. So why does the Mishnah need to use the word bo? What is telling us that he could do it himself teach us that we wouldn't have known otherwise? And the Gemara answers, Amar Rav Yosef, mitzvah bo yoser mi b'shlucho, that it's more of a mitzvah for him to do it himself than with a messenger. If the Mishnah would have just said, ha'ish mekadesh b'shlucho, that a man can accomplish kiddushin with a messenger, so yes, we might have known that he could also do it himself, but we might have thought those were equally as good. They're on par. He could do it himself, or he could do it with a messenger. Doesn't matter at all which one. Whichever is more convenient, whichever one he chooses to do, go right ahead, no problem. But Rav Yosef comes and tells us that the reason the Mishnah uses the extra, seemingly extra word, bo, is because without that word, we would have thought they were equal, and that word teaches us that it's better for him to do it himself. Yes, it will still work if he doesn't do it himself, and if he can't do it himself, and if he chooses to use a messenger, it will still be valid, it will still work, but it's better for him to do it himself. And the Gemara gives another example of where this principle applies. Kiha, still in source number 3 on the second line, Kiha derav Safra machrich resha, Rava malach shibuta. Just as Rav Safra would grind the head of the animal, and Rava would salt the fish. And Rashi comments there that this was the Kavod Shabbos. So the Gemara gives an example, two examples of two rabbis who would involve themselves in the preparations for Shabbos, the Kavod Shabbos. And the Gemara says that this is an example of that same principle, that it's better to do a mitzvah yourself. These rabbis, yeah, they had other people in the house who could do it, but they took the time, they took the effort, they put in the effort to help in the Shabbos preparations themselves, because mitzvah bo yoter mi b'shlucho, it's more of a mitzvah to do it yourself than to have someone else do it for you. So the Gemara says this is true about Kiddushin, and the other examples that the Gemara gives is about Kavod Shabbos, getting ready for honoring Shabbos. So there's two questions that I want to explore about this principle. Question one is why? Why is it better to do a mitzvah yourself? And question two is what? Does this principle apply specifically to these mitzvot mentioned in the Gemara here, Kiddushin and Kavod Shabbos? Or does this principle apply more broadly to all mitzvot and even things that aren't mitzvot per se, one of the 613, but even preparations for mitzvot and just good actions in general? So first we'll start with why. If you look at source 4, Rashi says, Mitzvah bo yotzei b'shlucho, d'chi asik gufo b'mitzvot mekabel schar tvei. Rashi says, it's better to do a mitzvah yourself, because when you involve yourself in the mitzvah with your own body, you get more schar, you get more reward. So Rashi says, it's about the reward. If you do it yourself, you get more reward. The Chida in source 5 says, why is it better to do a mitzvah yourself? Because if you don't, it's disrespectful to the mitzvah. He says, nir'eh kimit atzel b'mitzvah. It's like you're being lazy about the mitzvah. It looks like you're being lazy about the mitzvah. U'mechzeh kimizalzel b'mitzvah, she'enu chashuva b'inav kol kach l'elechu b'atzmo l'asotah. It looks like it's not important enough to you to go and do it yourself. You're lazy. This is something that has to get done, but I don't really feel like doing it, so I'm going to just send somebody else to do it. It's disrespectful to the mitzvah that it's not important enough priority for you to do it yourself. The Rambam gives one more explanation, and then I want to discuss different practical applications of the different explanations. The Rambam in Source 6 says, V'kach hikdim ba'al shlucha, the reason the Mishnah adds in the word ba, and the same thing would apply to bo, in addition to the shaliach, l'fi shehitaskut ha'adam b'mitzvah ba'atzmo, yoter shalim me'asher yatil al zulato la'asotalo. A man's personal involvement in a mitzvah is make the mitzvah more complete than if he has someone else do it for him. So the famous saying, if you want something done right, do it yourself, that's what the Rambam is getting at here. If you want the mitzvah done right, do it yourself. The way that you can ensure, the way that you can guarantee that the mitzvah is going to be done completely in the way that it needs to be done is by doing it yourself. And that's why, according to the Rambam, it's better to do it yourself. So we have two sort of categories here. One category is that it's about you, and it shows more respect on your part, or you'll get more schar if you do it yourself. And one category is that it's about the mitzvah. The mitzvah will get done better if you do it yourself. So one possible practical ramification of all of this is, let's say a mitzvah will get done better if someone else does it. Like, for example, anyone here has been a moel? So any of your husbands do any brises on any of your children? Your husband's a moel? Okay. So most of us, right, we don't want our husband to do the bris on our sons because he's not really an expert and we're nervous that he's not going to do a good job. But the Gemara says it's better for him to do the mitzvah himself than have someone else do it. So how does that work? How does that play out? So the Chida says, right, in source number 7, actually, let's go to source number 8 first, then we'll go back to source number 7. Kasher nahagu kol rabotenu, v'chol ha'am, afal pisha b'ki'in behilchot shchita, notzim lachazan lishchot. So, right, the Maharach or Zeruah says here, even though other people know how to do shchita, right, it's better for someone who's actually the shochet, for someone who's the expert, for someone who has a lot of experience, who does this every day, to do the shchita. Even though it's a mitzvah, right? Even though shchita is a mitzvah that, in theory, everybody should fulfill for himself. No, we have the shochtim, shecht, the animals, and then we benefit from that, because the mitzvah is actually going to get done better if it's done by the expert. So too, for bris milah, the Maharach or Zeruah actually comments later that it's better to have a moel do it, who's an expert, who's trained, and that's because the mitzvah is going to get done better. It's going to be done more completely if someone else does it than if you do it yourself. But if you think that really it's about you, right, the mitzvah having an impact on you, or you getting more schar, then maybe you would have to say that it's better for you to do it, even if you're not the expert. But the Chida in Source 7 says, "V'im ha'acher hu adam gadol yesh lomar dekshaosa oto shaliach in shum pikpuk mitzad mitzvah bo zahaika kavod habriyot v'kavod hamitzvah shata'aseh begdolim." The Chida says no, even if it's about the impact that the mitzvah is going to have on you, and or you showing respect to the mitzvah, or you not being lazy, having someone who's an expert do it, having someone who's really chashuv, who's really an important person, who everybody has a lot of respect for, that shows great respect to mitzvah, because you're showing that you want to do it in the, you want to have someone who's really a wonderful person fulfill this mitzvah, and you're doing, you're choosing that person as your agent to fulfill the mitzvah, precisely because you have so much respect for the mitzvah, not because you're lazy, not because you want to disrespect the mitzvah, but the opposite. But if you go with Rashi's approach, that it's about the schar, then maybe, even if it shows great respect for the mitzvah, and even if it will get done better with the expert, maybe Rashi would still say that you have to do it yourself, because you're going to still get more schar if you do it yourself. So we have a couple of different approaches as to why we have this principle, and I want to develop the why a little bit further, but first I want to discuss the what. So there's debate among the Rishonim about to which mitzvot does this principle apply. The Tosfot Riya Zakein, one of the Balei HaTosfot, one of the early Balei HaTosfot, in source number 9, he says, Kol mitzvah shemutelet alav ya'aseh begufo lo yadei shaliach. He says that every mitzvah that is that rests upon you to do, you should do yourself, not through a shaliach. So he thinks this is a broad principle. Yes, the Gemara gives the examples of Kavod Shabbos and is said this principle in the context of Kiddushin, but he thinks it applies more broadly. And the Shulchan Aruch, in Or HaChaim, he mentions a minhag that the Rush had, where he also shows that he thinks this principle applies more broadly. In source number 10, the Shulchan Aruch explains that the Rush would put in great effort to actually make matzahs himself. Right? HaRush hayam mishtadel b'matzat mitzvah ve'omir al asiyata umzareis ha'oskim bahem umisayeh ba'arichatan. The Rush would get involved in the preparations of making matzot for the matzah mitzvah, right, for the Seder night, and he would stand there and he would encourage all the people who were making it, and he would even help with the preparation of the dough. And the Shulchan Aruch says, V'chein ra'ui v'chol adam la'aso lehitapel hu ba'atzmo mitzvah. The Shulchan Aruch says, and that should be true of all of us, that we all need to try to put in effort to ourselves fulfill mitzvot. Okay, so the Shulchan Aruch says this in the context of matzah, which was not one of the examples mentioned in the Gemara. So clearly he thinks this principle is more broad, that it applies to all mitzvot, not just Shabbos and Kiddushin. The Chachma Shlomo, however, and some other Achronim also, disagree, and they say, right, in source 11, the Chachma Shlomo says, V'yish lomar, d'dafka b'kiddushin v'shabbos hadin kein v'lo b'sha'ar mitzvot. That no, this applies more specifically to Shabbos and Kiddushin, right, getting ready, kavod Shabbos and marriage, and not to other mitzvot. So, let's go back to the why, right, and see how this applies to our daily lives. And what I want to discuss now and develop is different approaches as to why this principle might be true, depending on which approach to the what we take, right? If we say that this is about all mitzvot, we might have a different understanding of why this is true, that it's better to do mitzvot yourself than through a messenger, than through an agent, than if we say it's just about Shabbos and Kiddushin, right? If this is a principle that's very specific to Shabbos and Kiddushin, to Shabbos and marriage, then we might learn something very specific about those two mitzvot, since by having this principle that it's better to do them yourself. Whereas if it's more broad, that might reflect a different understanding as to why this principle is true. So if we say that this is about all mitzvot, regardless of whether it's about you or it's about the mitzvah, I think it says something about how we're supposed to relate to doing mitzvot. And like I said before, not just the technical taryag mitzvot, not just the technical 613, but all acts of religious commitment and observance, even things that are preparing for mitzvot, or just good deeds, even if they're not technically on the list, I think it says something, this principle says something about how we're supposed to relate to those type of actions. There's something about engaging in these activities ourselves and not having other people do it for us that helps us achieve more than just checking an obligation off a checklist. This is a theme that Rav Soloveitchik developed in various places and really emphasized. Right? Serving God isn't just about technical, dry halacha. It has to be infused with feeling, and that feeling comes from it being experiential. So the next two sources are examples of this, where the Rav developed this idea, and I want to go through them together, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Rav's approach to this. So if you look at source number 12, this is an excerpt from the Rav's Hesped for the Tolner Rebbetzin, who is his Machtenista, 1977. So he writes, people are mistaken in thinking that there is only one Masorah and one Masorah community, the community of the fathers. It's not true. We have two Masorot, traditions, two communities, two Shalshalot HaKabbalah, the Masorah community of the fathers and that of the mothers. And he says this is reflected by the Pasuk in Shmot in the context of Matan Torah of Ma'amad Har Sinai, where he says, thus shalt thou say to the house of Jacob and tell the children of Israel, right? The Pasuk says, Ko tomar lebeit Yaakov v'tageid lebnei Yisrael. And he says there's two communities, Beit Yaakov and Bnei Yisrael. Same thing is reflected in the Pasuk in Mishle, where the Pasuk says, Shema b'ni Musar Avicha v'al titosh Torat Imecha. Hear, my son, the instruction of the father, Musar Avicha, and forsake not the teaching of thy mother, Torat Imecha, counsel of the old king. What is the difference between these two Masorot, these two traditions? What is the distinction between Musar Avicha and Torat Imecha? Let us explore what one learns from the father and what one learns from the mother. And I want to interject here and say that for me, I think in my generation, that for the Rav, this was true about his mother and his father. He got certain things from his mother and certain things from his father. But I don't necessarily think that it has to be divided along those male-female lines. And for me, it can mean that there's two different sort of types of teaching, two different types of education that come from parents. And sometimes the father can engage in one and the mother can engage in the other, and sometimes vice versa, or both parents can engage in both. I think the Rav really saw these two spheres, one in his life, he saw them separately, his father and his mother, but I don't think it necessarily has to be divided along those gender lines. But for his person, from his personal experience, that's what he felt. So with that in mind, let's see what he develops. So again, we're in source number 12. We're in the middle of the first paragraph. One learns much from father, how to read a text, the Bible or the Talmud, how to comprehend, how to analyze, how to conceptualize, how to classify, how to infer, how to apply, etc. One also learns from father what to do and what not to do, what's morally right and what's morally wrong. Father teaches the son the discipline of thought as well as the discipline of action. Father's tradition is an intellectual, moral one. That is why it is identified with Musar, which is a biblical term for discipline. So the father teaches the intellectual side. And then the Rav says, what is Torat Imecha? What kind of Torah does the mother pass on? I admit that I am not able to define precisely the Masoretic role of the Jewish mother. Only by circumscription I hope to be able to explain it. Permit me to draw upon my own experiences. I used to have long conversations with my mother. In fact, it was a monologue rather than a dialogue. She talked, and I happened to overhear. What did she talk about? I must use a halachic term in order to answer this question. She talked me'inyane diyoma, from the relevant period of the topic of the day. I used to watch her arranging the house in honor of a holiday. I used to see her recite prayers. I used to watch her recite the Sedra every Friday night, and I still remember the nostalgic tune. I learned from her very much. Most of all, I learned that Judaism expresses itself not only in formal compliance with the law, but also in a living experience. She taught me that there is a flavor, a scent, and warmth to mitzvot. I learned from her the most important thing in life, to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of His hand resting upon my frail shoulders. Without her teachings, which quite often were transmitted to me in silence, I would have grown up a soulless being, dry and insensitive. The laws of Shabbos, for instance, were passed on to me by my father. They are part of Musar Avicha. The Shabbos as a living entity, as a queen, was revealed to me by my mother. It's part of Torah Imecha. The fathers knew much about the Shabbos. The mothers lived the Shabbos, experienced her presence, and perceived her beauty and splendor. The fathers taught generations how to observe the Shabbos. Mothers taught generations how to greet the Shabbos and how to enjoy her 24-hour presence. So I think the Rav is developing here, and his words really speak for themselves and are extremely powerful, and I don't want to take away anything from his words by explaining too much, but he's developing here that yes, there's the halacha. Yes, there's the details. Yes, there's the things that we need to check off the list. But there's also the experience. And I think maybe this principle of mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho is getting at that. You can't live that experience if you're not doing it yourself. If you send somebody else to check off the obligations on the list, you're missing out on the experience. In source number 12, the Rav develops this idea as well. In source number 13, excuse me, on page 4, source 13, the Rav develops this idea as well, and talking about Yom Kippur. And he says, my religious worldview was formed not only through learning Torah, but also by my religious experience. And he says, I continually refer to the two traditions of Torah learning, and he's being honest there, right? This is something that he continued to develop over and over again. Halacha and that of religious life and feeling. The enthusiasm, the love of Hashem, the yearning for Hashem. The first is relatively easy to impart. I can give long lectures on shofar, on the halachos of tshuva, on the avoda, with great depth and thoroughness. Yet what's easy for me to explain regarding the first tradition is very difficult regarding the second tradition. To recount what Jews of earlier generations, not only the Gedolei Yisrael, but Jews in general, experienced on the Yamim Noraim, the yearning, the nostalgia that overtook one's entire being, to impart that emotion is almost impossible. As a child, I remember how infectious that emotion was. I felt the same yearning as everyone else without really understanding what exactly I was yearning for. Those emotions which overtook me as a child stimulate me still today in my whole Weltanschauung. My whole religious philosophy is a result of this experience. And the Rav actually laments that he felt contemporary orthodoxy is well grounded intellectually. In spite of this, however, its followers lack passion and enthusiasm. This deficiency is especially evident on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and the Rav famously painted this picture where he said, how can a Jew pray on Yom Kippur and not feel the greatness, the fire, and holiness of the day? How can I possibly impart such an experience? Perhaps one can begin to awaken the ecstatic feeling by discussing the customs and laws which you observe on Yom Kippur. From within the allegedly dry confines of Jewish law, there is an awesome, warm, enormous world. There is a definite transition from halacha to service of Hashem. Perhaps through such discussion, the audience will be awakened to the religious mood that a Jew must find himself on Yom Kippur. And the Rav here drives home this idea that keeping halacha alone, just checking the details off the list, that's not service of Hashem. It has to come with the emotional piece, with the experiential piece, and doing mitzvot ourselves, I think, enables us to access that. And for the Rav, he actually viewed this emotional experiential component as part of the halachic requirements of many mitzvot. Not extra to the halacha, but an essential part of fulfilling the mitzvah. The Rav actually developed a category of mitzvah. He said there are some mitzvot which are more intellectual, which require us to think something. Like, for example, if you hold that believing in God is a mitzvah, so that requires us to think something. And there are some mitzvot which are solely action-based. We have to eat matzah. When we eat the matzah, by swallowing the matzah, we fulfill the mitzvah. It doesn't matter, maybe according to Rabbi Gamliel, that we say at the end of Maggid, this isn't true, but according to most opinions, it doesn't matter if we have in mind why we left Mitzrayim and what happened when we left Mitzrayim when we're eating the matzah. As long as you swallow the right amount of matzah, and we won't get into how much exactly that is and the exact amounts, but as long as you swallow the matzah, you fulfill the mitzvah. And the Rav developed another category of mitzvot where there's an action that you have to do. Right? He didn't develop the mitzvot, obviously the mitzvot come from Hashem, but he kind of categorized certain mitzvot in this way, where he said, there's an action that has to be done, but fulfilling the mitzvah is about the experience that comes from doing that action. It's about the emotion, it's about the connection that comes from doing that action. And he said, for example, tefillah is that type of mitzvah. Yes, we have to say words with our mouths, but fulfilling the mitzvah requires us to have this feeling of standing before God. That's what the actual mitzvah is, right? So yes, we fulfill the mitzvah by muttering words, but we only actually complete the fulfillment of the mitzvah if we have the appropriate emotion, if we have the appropriate feeling. Same thing with Kriyat Shema. Yes, we have to say the words of Kriyat Shema, the parshiyot of Kriyat Shema, but unless we feel that we're being mekabel ol malchut shamayim, that we're taking on the burden of keeping mitzvot and of God's presence, we don't fulfill the mitzvah. And he actually develops this idea with regard to Kavod Shabbos as well, and that hopefully will tie back together to our initial Gemara that we read about Mitzvah Bo Yoter Mibishlucho. In the Shirim Lezichra Abba Mari, one of the Yurtzeit lectures that the Rav gave in honor of his father's Yurtzeit, the Rav mentions the Rambam discussing Kavod Shabbos. And the Rambam says, and you don't have this on your story sheet, but I'll read it slowly. The Rambam says, "Ezahu Kavod, how do you fulfill Kavod Shabbos? Ze sha'amru chachamim shemitzvah al adam lirchutz panav yadav raglav b'chamin b'erev Shabbos." So how do you fulfill Kavod Shabbos? You take a shower with hot water on Friday afternoon, mipnei kavod haShabbat, out of respect for the Shabbat, umit atif b'tzitzit, and you get dressed, v'yoshiv, b'kuved rosh miyachel hakbalat pnei haShabbat, and you sit there in that solemn emotional seat, getting ready, right, pondering and getting ready to greet the Shabbos. So I think that this is something that's very difficult, especially as the weeks get earlier and earlier, for us to not be rushing into Shabbos and light candles at the end of the 18 minutes. But according to the Rambam, that's not what we're supposed to do. So then that's in Halacha Bet of this parak talking about Kavod Shabbos. And then the Rambam also says, and you should set the table nicely to get ready for Shabbos, and you should get dressed nicely in a nice outfit, and you can eat so much on Friday afternoon to make sure you're hungry for the Shabbos meal. But the Rav says that the first things that the Rambam mentions in talking about Kavod Shabbos are the same things that the Rambam requires you to do before davening. To wash your hands, to put on tzitzit, and to ponder the activity you're about to do. And the Rav develops from that for the Rambam, Kavod Shabbos is fulfilled by being mekabel pnei hashchinah, by accepting God's presence that comes into our homes on Shabbos, which is the same thing that we're doing in Tefillah. So it's not a coincidence that the Rambam says the same things that you have to do to prepare for davening are also the activities you do to get ready for Shabbos and to fulfill Kavod Shabbos, because it's really the goal of that and the fulfillment of each of those mitzvot is the same, that we're accepting the presence of the Shekhinah of Hashem. So yes, it's accomplished through actions, but the essence of the mitzvah is the experience of feeling God's presence. And it's no surprise then that the Rav lamented in a third place where he also develops this idea in Al HaTshuva that he laments the loss in contemporary America of the Erev Shabbos Jew. He says, even in those neighborhoods made up predominantly of religious Jews, one can no longer talk of the sanctity of Shabbos. True, there are Jews in America who observe Shabbos, but it's not for the Shabbos that my heart aches. It's for the forgotten Erev Shabbos. There are Shabbat observing Jews in America, but there are no Erev Shabbos Jews who go out to the street, who go out to greet Shabbos with beating hearts and pulsating souls. So for the Rav, as we see in these many places that he developed this idea, an essential part of fulfilling mitzvot was the emotional experience that came from fulfilling those mitzvot and the experiential part of those actions. And I think that really ties back to mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho. Why? Why is it so important that we do mitzvot ourselves? It's because you miss the whole element, you miss a whole aspect of what mitzvot are all about if you have someone else do it for you. Yeah, it still works. Yeah, you still check the obligation off the list, but you really miss the essence and you miss that experiential component. And this is proven in general in life, that creating experiences around activities and not just kind of checking obligations off a list furthers relationships. It enhances relationships. If you look at source 14, this is a quote that I took from the Gottman Institute relationship blog. John Gottman is a therapist who did a research in what he calls his love lab. He studied couples, and he says that he's able to predict which couples are going to stay together and which couples are going to end up divorced. So he's a therapist, and he wrote the 7 principles of making marriage work. And he writes on the blog for his institute in source 14, relationships aren't just about date nights, weekend getaways, and making love. They can also have a spiritual dimension that has to do with creating an inner life together, a culture rich with symbols and rituals, and an appreciation for your roles and goals that link you. Another way to create shared meaning is to create traditions and rituals for your life together as a couple. Start by talking to each other about the kinds of traditions and rituals that you each had when you were growing up. What are your best and worst memories? What would have made them better? What are these rituals like for you today? What do they mean or symbolize to you? How would you like them to be now? Share each of your past experiences with these traditions and create special ones of your own for this year and for many years to come. So he's emphasizing that having experiences together, sharing experiences with another person. Here he's talking about your spouse, but I think it's true of parents and children, it's true of friendships, that deepens a relationship. Creating that shared meeting through those experiences deepens the relationship. I know for my family last year when we had a lot of snow days, we sort of kind of created our snow day ritual. We would wake up in the morning, have pancakes for breakfast, make pancakes, you know, from scratch for breakfast. We would go out and play in the snow, come in, have some hot chocolate to warm up, and my husband and my son would build a tent out of blankets and all the chairs in our apartment. When the next snow day came, my son would already know, oh, it's a snow day, we're doing this and this and this and this and this. It was the family tradition, it was the family ritual, and that really created a bond amongst us, and it really, you know, I think created a certain, that creating that ritual really, I think, deepened the relationship. I think music is something that's especially helpful, and everybody has to think for him or herself what works for you and what kind of experiences help you connect and what kind of experiences make you relate more. I think music, though, is an especially powerful tool. Some of my friends make fun of me that from the end of Tisha B'Av until the end of Sukkot, basically, I'm listening to Yom Noraim davening in my car. I have CDs, Yisrael Williger, and different family recordings that I like to listen to in the car, and that really helps me get in the mood, and it sort of creates an experience around that season that helps me connect and helps me relate. See, and it's true of all the Chagim. I have certain Hanukkah music that I like to play around Hanukkah time, and even just playing Erev Shabbos music in the house when you're getting ready for Shabbos, I think sort of creates an experience around Shabbos that can deepen our connection. Speaking of Shabbos, right, so I think that all of the experience around mitzvot really helps us understand why mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho would be true if we say it's true about all mitzvot. But what if it's true, what if the principle, as we said before, is a possibility among the Rishonim, is just true about Shabbos and Kiddushin, Shabbos and marriage? What's special about those mitzvot that we would say it's of extreme importance that you do this yourself and you invest in it yourself, even more so than other mitzvot? And I think maybe it says something about the nature of those two mitzvot in particular. Shabbos is emblematic, that they require great personal investment. Shabbos is emblematic and paradigmatic of our relationship with Hashem. It represents our covenant with Hashem from the beginning of time, right? As we read in this past week's Parsha, part of why we have Shabbos is because Hashem rested after creating the world in the seventh day, Zecher L'Maaseh Bereishis. And from Yitziat Mitzrayim, when we became a people, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, we became a people, and Hashem gave us the Torah. It represents that covenant as well, Zecher L'Yitziat Mitzrayim, we say in Kiddush. And we can't just pawn that off on somebody else. We have to actively engage ourselves in affirming that covenant and that commitment on our side of that covenant and our commitment each week. And if you look at Source 15, which is an excerpt from the Shabbos Project website, actually from last year, but the Shabbos Project, a worldwide effort to have as many people around the world keeping Shabbos that week as possible. It's coming up in 2 weeks, Parshat Lech Lecha. They emphasize this point about Shabbos. If you look at Source 15, the power of Shabbos, keeping it together is also an allusion to the unique restorative powers, the opportunity for deep physical, emotional, and spiritual rejuvenation that the full Shabbos experience affords. This is especially relevant in a modern world in which we are bombarded with technology and gadgetry. Shabbos enables us to set aside time to revisit and reinvigorate our most important relationship with God, with our families and friends, and with our inner selves. Through Shabbos, we keep it, our lives together. So they're emphasizing here that this is a time where we're really showing our commitment to Hashem, showing and invigorating that important relationship. And that requires our own personal investment. If we have someone else do it for us, it's not going to deepen the relationship because we're not even involved. And the same is true with marriage and relationships with other human beings. We have to personally invest ourselves in those relationships to get the most out of them. And that is the idea of mitzvah bo yoter mibishlucho. It's better to do it yourself because you're going to get more out of it and you're going to be able to deepen the relationship only by doing it yourself and not having somebody else do it for you. One important point to remember with this idea and this theme, though, is that we must be careful not to fall into the trap of finding spirituality in experiences which we create from scratch. Like I mentioned before, right, like hopping on one foot. It has to emanate from mitzvot and from halachic observance. And this is a point that Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, makes in his essay about law and spirituality. And this is the last source 16. Rav Lichtenstein says, we shall abandon neither the normative nor the experiential pole, right? Halacha and experience are both important. On the one hand, as committed Jews, we have neither the right nor the desire to reject halacha. On the other hand, we dare not and we may not forego spirituality as either value or mode. So halacha is important, but spirituality is also important. Its significance is dual. First, it ennobles and purifies human personality. Second, it brings a person closer to the Ribono Shel Olam, and hence to his service. What is needed, clearly, is balance, and it is that which, within the parameters of tradition, has been sought. What we need, however, is more than balance, with its connotation of respective checks and equilibrium. We need mutual, genuinely reciprocal fructification. On the one hand, the spiritual is to inform and enrich the material and intellectual. Conversely, halacha enriches spirituality. They have to work together. We can't create spirituality out of things that are not really coming from the Torah, coming from halacha. And I think that's something that sometimes in today's world we need reminding about. So I wanted to conclude with that reminder that they have to work together and they have to complement each other. And my hope is that for each of us this year, we can enrich our lives going forward into the after the Chagim season. We can enrich our lives spiritually by creating traditions, memories, and experiences around halacha and Jewish ritual that help what would otherwise be dry and technical come alive and become meaningful. But also that we can appreciate the value of the routine of the Korban Tamid and find meaning in that in and of itself, of incorporating God into our daily lives, even when we don't find the particular practice all that inspiring, or at least not every time we do it. So I wish everyone a Shana Tova and a good week.